It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brad Rump. Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown.
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible.
You're older than I'm
white. Yeah, well, you're half right.
This is amateur hour.
This is going to be huge.
I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Just when I think you said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
Boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Y'all ready for this?
Thank God it's
Friday. It's Friday, Friday. Gotta get down on Friday.
Here we go into a sports weekend with a Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, Adam Lundy, our producer, and we've got you connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. Questions, comments, suggestions, what's on your mind on this Friday? It is Final Four weekend. Tonight we've got women's basketball. Tomorrow the men take the court. Are you excited about this Final Four? It's not exactly the blue bloods of the college game, but I'm pumped. Let's go, FAU. Let's go, Owls. And the news, of course, from Boca Raton, Dusty May not going anywhere. There's a lot of speculation that some bigger programs might come after him. But apparently, here's the other part of this story that we didn't tell in the first hour. There were programs that inquired and requested an interview with Dusty May. He turned them down. That was even before this extension. Said he was perfectly happy in Boca Raton, was looking to continue to build this program. He said, we've recruited a team that is like family, and you don't just walk out on your family. And so he seemed to be a loyal guy. And, you know, like Mark Few, it's, you know, there was a time when every time there was a big opening, there was the question, would Mark Few go and leave Gonzaga to go take that job? And that went on for, what, 4 or 5 years? And then eventually it just became very apparent to everybody that Mark Few was probably going to stay at Gonzaga on a lifetime deal. He was not going to leave Spokane, Washington. And you wonder with Dusty May, how long he will last at FAU. It says, according to CBS Sports, that there are they're going to have a long-term contract extension, a lucrative contract extension that's going to be signed right after the Final Four. Included in the deal is going to be $10 million that will be committed to facilities and the arena at Boca Raton. They didn't say new arena, but they did say they would upgrade the facilities. Now, I don't know, in my mind, are they going to talk to perhaps the city of Boca Raton? Kind of like what Western Michigan is doing with Kalamazoo, building the downtown arena for the Western Michigan athletic programs to play in. Are they going to, you know, try to get a joint venture where they can get a 7,000 or 8,000 seat arena? Right now, I say arena, and that's like using the term very loosely because it's not really an arena. It's just an oversized gym. It's a nice high school gym that holds about 3,000 people. So they do need a bigger place. They're going to be playing in the American Conference, the AAC, and you know that's a conference where most of the arenas are like the Coliseum. They are not like the Gates Center. In fact, what's interesting is the Horizon League, pretty much the deal when the Mastodons joined the Horizon League is that the Mastodons will be playing home games at the Coliseum. The Horizon League representatives came when they were evaluating whether or not to extend a bid to Purdue Fort Wayne. They came into town and they toured the Coliseum. They wanted to see the facilities. And it's much like IUPUI plays their games in an arena that they're kind of bound to because on campus at IUPUI, you've got the jungle, which I think holds about 1,800 people. It's not anywhere. It's not even as big as the Gates Center. And so I'm surprised that the American Conference would accept FAU without some kind of a long-term vision or commitment that they were going to get some type of an arena or bigger arena done in South Florida. But, you know, you've got Fort Lauderdale that's about 30 minutes to the south. You've got West Palm Beach about 30 minutes to the north. Both of them have facilities. I mean, I don't know if there's a true arena in either one, but you've got plenty of large facilities in both cities. And, of course, Miami loaded with arenas. But we'll see what happens. But the big story is that Dusty May is going to be staying at FAU as the Owls will will be going up against San Diego State. Also, you've got UConn and Miami, a possibility that could be an all-South Florida championship game, which means 80% of the country won't watch. How much will people care if it ends up being FAU-Miami? They'll be loving it down there at the house we got in South Florida. My wife, my kids, they'll be all happy about it. But, yeah. In fact, maybe it will start something. You know, FAU and Miami don't play each other. Maybe they should start some kind of a series with each other.
Yeah, the South Florida series. There you go.
I like that. The South Florida series. It's like the Feed the Fort Festival that we've talked about yesterday, where we want to set up a festival where you can skip all the parades. Let's just get to the food. Junk Food Alley.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you and I are going to be the executive board of this new festival, and we're going to call it the Feed the Fort Festival, and it's going to be nothing but cinnamon rolls, glazed donuts. Yeah.
What more do you need?
Elephant ears. Yeah. All the worst foods you could possibly eat, we will have them there. Look at Adam and I, a couple of true dad bods hosting the festival.
And I'm not even a dad
yet. And you're not even a dad. Yeah, you already got the bod.
Thanks, Brett.
Well, you're more than welcome.
But yeah, the South Florida series, they could even invite USF and maybe one more team. Get FIU
well,
in there.
The problem is USF isn't really truly... See, in Florida, Southeast Florida is South Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they don't use the East. It's just South Florida is known as kind of the Fort Lauderdale-Miami area. University of South Florida is actually in Tampa, which is not even close to... So if they added another team, it would have to be Florida International.
But then who's the fourth?
The fourth team would be, I don't know if Florida, Florida Gulf Coast.
Yeah, I was going to say FGCU.
Florida Gulf Coast is right across the state. It's straight across. It's the closest one. Let's put it that way.
There's your four.
There you go. All right. Another executive decision that we could make here on the Sports Rush that somebody will steal and... You know, we talked about FAU being the next Gonzaga. Now we've got texters that are telling us FAU is going to be the next Gonzaga. We said that before anyone else did.
It's true.
It's true. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. So tonight, women's Final Four. And, of course, I think the showcase is going to be Caitlin Clark against South Carolina, the best individual player and perhaps all time in women's college basketball. I mean, that might be debatable, but she certainly is the best player this year. She's won National Player of the Year, but the best individual against the greatest team. Is she going to be enough to be able to overcome that strong, tall, big, athletic South Carolina squad? And then you've got on the other game, the game that nobody will pay attention to. This is truly like going to a Taylor Swift concert and not knowing who the opening act even is and not caring. Because LSU plays Virginia Tech. Is that right?
Yep.
I mean, that Virginia Tech powerhouse women's program that we've all come to know and love. Yeah, they're taking on LSU. I think LSU will win. I think South Carolina will beat Iowa. I mean, how do you bet against South Carolina? They've won, 46 straight games or 45? I don't know what the number is. But they haven't lost hardly at all. And we'll have an LSU, South Carolina, All-Southeast Conference championship game Sunday. Men, you know what I'm going with. San Diego State. FAU, let's go Owls. Gotta take those Owls. Are they still giving me points too? Am I? You know, San Diego State was actually the favorite this game. I think Vegas has completely missed out on FAU. Yeah, FAU is a 2.5-point underdog.
Wow. Yeah, we actually just got a text on our text line, 46862, from Mr. Vegas, and South Carolina is -11.5 tonight.
I saw that. Big number.
Yeah.
That's a big number for an Iowa team that scores points. But then, gosh, South Carolina's been so good. What is Vegas doing? What is Mr. Vegas doing?
He didn't say what he's taking.
No, he didn't say.
But he also said that LSU is -2 for that one.
And I'll take LSU all day at -2.
There you go.
I don't know if I'll win, but I'll take it all. I'll take it all day long.
Yeah, I'll take it.
And I'm going to take the 2.5 points with FAU. When a team has won 35 games, they are not going to go down without a fight. I mean, this game is going to go down. And you know, 2.5 is basically saying you believe a full possession or maybe even a two-possession win for San Diego State. I don't think that's going to happen. I think if San Diego State wins this game, it's going to be tight. It's going to be a possession game. And so I'm riding FAU. And then I can't help but take UConn and give 5 points. UConn's been the most dominant team in the tournament. They've won almost every tournament game by 20-plus, right? What's so special about Miami? Yeah, they won the ACC. But I'm going to roll with UConn and FAU for tomorrow night.
Yeah, I think that's a that's not a crazy prediction at all.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine, text line 46862. This news, kind of sad news that came down the pipeline this morning. And for those that have been old timers in this community for a long time, you're going to know this name. And some of you maybe even played for this person. Buzz Dorfler, legendary coach of the Northrop Bruins football team. He may have even coached at Central. I saw somebody mention Central. That's before my time. But I remember Buzz Dorfler as the coach of Northrop. Buzz Dorfler passed away last night. The Northrop Bruins athletic Twitter and others posted talked to Shannon Griffith, who was on this morning with Caleb and Kenny, filling in for Justin Kenny the final day that Justin's not going to be here. He promises to return from the Florida beaches and be here on Monday morning. We'll see if that happens. Keep our fingers crossed. But Shannon Griffith was on this morning with Caleb Hatch. And I talked to Griffith this afternoon. He actually was on the Northrop football team as a freshman when Buzz Dorfler was still the varsity coach. But our thoughts go out to the entire Dorfler family. And so many in that family have influenced athletes because you had Dale, you had Dean, and now Jason, who is coaching at Leo after he coached at Northrop. And so, our thoughts with the Dorfler family, a very powerful name in high school football here in our community. Buzz Dorfler passed away last night. We're going to go ahead and take a break. We've got TinCast President Mike Nutter. He's going to be joining us coming up in just a couple of minutes.
This is Purdue Fort Wayne men's basketball coach John Call, and you're listening to The Sports Rush with Brett Rump on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Go Dons!
Kind of a big weekend this weekend here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM, because tomorrow morning, talking sports with Jim Shevlin won't be Jim Shevlin. It will be none other than Adam Lundy getting to sit in the captain's chair for an hour.
Yeah.
Don't get too comfortable in it once you get there, but you'll have a number of great guests. Dan Vance is going to join you and talk a little Mad Ants basketball, also talk about high school basketball.
Yeah.
And you'll also have the guests we have joining us now.
I'm stealing them.
Team guest president. Yeah, when I have you book the guest for this show, I didn't expect you to do a double book. But hey, it makes your life easy tomorrow morning, 9 to 10, right here on 1380 The Fan, 100.9 FM. TinCast President Mike Nutter joins us. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hey, great to be on with you, my friend. I guess that explains that last text that I got about 8 minutes ago that said, hey, if you need to cancel today, let us know, but I definitely need you tomorrow.
Yeah, if you can only do one, I'm just going to slip this little info. Yeah. That it'd be perfectly fine if you went to Kessel today. A lot happening with baseball. Of course, the excitement of having a new roster and then Major League Baseball opening day and then the news on the collective bargaining agreement. I mean, so many things happening with baseball. And I thought it'd be a good thing to have you on and talk a little bit about all of this. First of all, Let's talk, before we get to the roster, because we did have a chance to kind of talk to John yesterday about that, but I want to talk about specifically this collective bargaining agreement that was reached with the players. And, you know, a lot of people I don't think understand fully exactly how the players are compensated, how they're chosen here. You know, you run the ballpark, but the team that you see on the field, that's being controlled pretty much by the Padres.
No question about it. And so we have not gotten, and I want to answer your question for everything we know. We have not gotten any official word from Major League Baseball that there's a deal reached. Jeff Passan said there was a deal. Jeff's as great as a media member as there is in this country. He's dialed in, so I have no doubt it's very close. The stuff that I saw showed, if correct, that the players would get, I think it's fair to say, a significant amount more money, more pay throughout the year, which I think is something that they were looking forward to. So let's talk about it briefly for the fans. And again, without having finalized anything, it's hard for me, but you know, typically the guys have not been paid years past, prior to this year, for spring training and different mini camps and different things like that. And so, you know, they would get out here, and great progress was made last year by the San Diego Padres and Major League Baseball, where all the players' living arrangements were taken care of. Again, to only speak for the Tin Caps players, the Padres stepped up and did even more than they needed to do and took care of rent. They took care of utilities. They took care of water, cable, internet, all furniture rental, all that kind of stuff. Made accommodations for married players. We don't typically have many of those at the high level, but when we do, they did a lot of stuff. So you could see this going in the right direction. And so for the players, I mean, and really, I think for the game. And so there's a lot of excitement. You know, the players are flying in tomorrow. One of the other things that I understand is in the deal and don't even know exactly the specifics yet is this number, these three letters that we've all heard over college sports the last couple of years is NIL. And so we have one of the top 20 prospects in baseball coming in this year in Jackson Merrill. John would have talked about him yesterday. We jokingly call him the number one pick. They didn't trade for Juan Soto. No, and so, you know, we don't typically do bobbleheads of guys like when they're here and stuff like that. But a real life example of him could be, hey, if we wanted to do one, would we need to get his permission? Would he ask for compensation? Like all this stuff is unknown. But we understand, like in the past, prior to last year, if a guy played for us at any time, we own the rights to do a giveaway of some sort and get it sponsored. So Fernando Tatis is a perfect example that, you know, may go on to win an MVP someday. Obviously, he's on the road to redemption now and doing all the right things. And so there's a lot of excitement about him through the minors, through the major leagues this year. We did a bobblehead of his a couple years ago. We were able to do that because he played for us. We could do it in a uniform. The way I understand it going forward, we would have to get approvals and maybe provide some compensation. I think everybody understands we don't have thousands and thousands of dollars to give somebody to do a giveaway, or we probably just wouldn't do it type of thing. But I think it's great for the players. I think it's great for the game. You know, I also think that with Major League Baseball right now, all the keyboard warriors and Twitter warriors over the last couple months, and I'm not calling anybody out really other than tongue in cheek, but like that haven't even been willing to give the new rules a chance. The bases you can't even notice. Hopefully it means more steals because that's more excitement. Ricky Henderson's still the single most exciting player I think I've ever seen in my lifetime. Yeah, other guys have been better at different things, but just the excitement level was tremendous. I saw somebody asking J.J. Cooper of Baseball America earlier today. He'd be an awesome guest for you and Adam to have on sometime, you know, in the afternoons. And they said, well, J.J., he's doing a poll on his thing right now. And I think 65% maybe said they love it after one day, 15% or something like say that, you know, they could take it or leave it, and then the balance, whatever that'd be, 20% said they didn't like it. And somebody just asked him specifically, hey, how'd you vote, which I always think is interesting. But J.J. said, it's one day, and it's spring training, but it seems a lot more like the game I fell in love with as a kid. And so we saw that out at Parkview Field, you know, where we shaved off some good amount of game time. The average spring training game, I've heard 42 minutes, 46 minutes. It doesn't mean less action, it means the more the same amount of action in a less amount of time. And I think if fans give it a chance, that's a good thing.
Mike, you bring up a point that Major League Baseball is trying out a lot of these rules first at the minor league level, and we saw it here in Fort Wayne with the pitch clock last year. But when you test something like that, there's got to be an evaluation. Somebody's got to say, yes, it worked, or no, it didn't, or here's the changes I'd recommend. Who is Major League Baseball asking when they test this? Are they asking team executives? Are they asking managers, players? Who are they asking about it?
I don't mean this in any negative way. They didn't ask any of the general managers or people in my positions that I'm aware of, which, again, I understand. They have all the data points. You know, I was going to jokingly say they didn't ask our director of concessions that would have loved like 30 minutes more. We had a handful of those days. You were around for several of them where it's like, man, that went so fast. Could we get through the lines? But all in all, we think it's great. So I think, to answer your question, I'm not entirely sure, but I think farm directors, major league general managers, the minor league field staff, and that sort of thing. And again, our timing's a little different than the major leagues by a couple seconds here and there. It's a great game that so many of us love. We added from 2009 to 2 years ago almost 55 minutes in the average game time from when we opened Parkview Field to 2021. I just don't believe that was going to be sustainable for another 10 or 15 years if it kept going up and up. And so I was watching the games yesterday as a fan. I think it was the Houston game I had on at one point against the White Sox. And a guy, no, it wasn't. I think it was Chris Bryant, and it was against the Padres late at night. And he fouled one off. He started to take that walk down towards the third baseline. And he got this look on his face like a little kid, like at a smirk, and like scurried back to the, you know, to the batter's box. Chris, the guy that a lot of people pull for from his Cub days and stuff like that. So it's taken a little bit to get used to. But I think they said the last couple games of spring training, there was an average of like one violation per game. So everybody thinking, hey, bottom of the ninth, or Bryce Harper, you know, unfortunately for me as a Padre guy, when he homered off Suarez and that at bat took like 10 minutes. And again, it was awesome, right? You know, for the Phillies fans especially. But it's like, folks, the game will adapt. The players will figure it out. And it's really, really good. Then people follow up with the last one of, hey, are we going to see automated strike zones and automated balls and strikes and all that kind of stuff? Again, I don't know, but they're testing it out in a couple minor leagues this year. The Midwest League is not one of those, and they're going to continue to look at that stuff. So I think fans want it to be the calls to be right. And, you know, we all love the March Madness and so much going on, but there was one game, and they felt like they went to the clock and the monitor like six times in the final couple minutes, and one team was out of timeouts, but it felt like they got five more. I think what they need to make sure is it's just not choppy and the flow's really good. So I think it's been great. We're going to welcome the team. They fly in tomorrow. We're going to do an event, meet the team, first time back since COVID on Tuesday night. Autograph days are back on Sundays. We're excited about that. The minor leagues is made by fans getting access. In the COVID year and following, it's been a little different, but a lot more back to normal this year.
I joked with John yesterday. I said, it's not going to be right when the team shows up and Justin Lopez is not one of the team members.
Well, so I can tell you this, and I know we're always on a time crunch, but you're so gracious with having me on and stuff. I walk into the spring training complex, and a guy walks out and says, there he is, the mayor of Fort Wayne, Indiana. And I started laughing, and I said, I don't want that kind of pressure. And the guy looked and he said, I wasn't talking to you. Lopez is behind you. So Justin laughed and told Todd that runs spring training. It was really, they respect and love each other. I love Lopey. I had heard at one point he might be coming here as our closer. I would have welcomed that. He's such a great kid. Brett, the day I was out there, he was 95 miles an hour. And he's going all the way from, you know, the Arizona League when they sent him back all the way up to Double A to be in the bullpen. And so exciting for him. It would be a cool story if he got all the way back. Jose Ruiz is one of our former guys. He's the setup man for the White Sox, and he was a catcher with us for a couple of years. And so it happens. Lopey had flashes every year he was here of like the player of the week, but couldn't sustain it. But before they released him, they wanted to get that kid on the hill, and so far so good for everybody.
I know there's been a lot of orientation and all for new employees, and of course the Tin Caps always employ a good number of people for the summer. How are things as far as job opportunities right now?
there's a lot available, so the college kids are going to be coming back. We need them. We want them. We want teachers, retirees, anybody. But in the same breath, we can also say we're in a lot better shape than we have been the last couple years. So tincaps.com or tincapsjobs.com, they can check it out. It's going to be a fun season. Everybody's excited. And maybe we'll even actually have a spring-like day for an opening day for a change.
You're wishing for far too much now, Mike.
Yeah, you're right.
We're just hoping the team shows up.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got the Meet the Team event coming up on Tuesday. What can fans expect that can come out to the ballpark that night?
So hopefully weather cooperates and they're going to come out. They can watch the guys practice. 5 to 8, free to get in. We'll have some concessions open if anybody wants to try any of the stuff and some of the new stuff. And then after the practice, all the players will be available for autographs. Again, start the personalization, get to know some of these people. They'll know the name Merrill because we talk about him a lot, but Joshua Mears is coming back, who's just a great young kid and battled a lot of stuff last year and a lot of these other guys. And then Wednesday, they'll be out on the field practicing again. And then, hey, they get up on the road Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Major League Baseball, in my opinion, did the right thing by letting people play on Thursday night instead of Easter. If any of the teams wanted to, West Michigan wanted to, the Padres agreed. And then so we're right back at it Tuesday night, April 11th. It's like it always is. We joked about the weather. We've sold a couple thousand tickets. You know, if the weather's great, that number will double. If the weather's, snowing, it'll be half of that. But we're going to get this thing going, 66 great home games, a team that won the championship last year in the California League, and Johnny Matthews coming in as the manager, who I consider a friend and a guy that is as excited to sit in that chair as anybody we've ever had, and it's going to be great. We're really excited and optimistic.
And, Mike, I don't want to speak for you, but seeing Brian Esposito get the chance with the big club after what he went through here last year, and it wasn't that, they were doing this intentionally to just kind of crap on Brian, but all the trades and the roster changes and everything that he had to go through, it was a difficult year for Brian, and to get the reward of now being part of the big league staff, that really is cool.
It's so cool because he's really focused on two or three guys. And so he's focused on Austin Nola, the more everyday guy. But Austin's a converted shortstop from the minor leagues. And when he played at LSU, of course, his brother's the ace of the Phillies. Aaron Nola. And then he's focused on former Tin Cap Luis Camposano. I think Campy's going to start tomorrow. I think game three of the big league season with Waka on the hill. And Campy is one of these kids that has dominated in the minors. And he has a lot to learn about, or he has had in the past a lot to learn about calling games and such. And Espo can focus on those two guys. You said it. He was a pro's pro last year. We weren't great on the field. He was coming down from the AAA level to high A. Again, our venue and fans and media don't take a back seat to much. And so I didn't know at first how it would be. And I shook his hand out there in Peoria when my son and I got out to spring training. Gave him a big hug. I was so happy for him. I had fans last year asking me in like August, you think they're going to can this guy, man? We can't win any Yankees. And I'm laughing going, that whole line about X's and O's and Jimmy's and Joe's and stuff. And I said, Brian is really, really relatable for the fan or for the players and stuff. And he let them. He had that AAA mentality of like, there's extra work every day if you want it. You just got to show up. And so I'm so happy for him. He caught a nice video that we put out, I think, yesterday with John Nolan of sending the love back to the Tin Caps. He told me when we were out there, it was a one-year deal. It could have gone a different way, but he's such a pro. It was perfect.
Absolutely. And, Mike, I'll let you go so there's something for you to talk about with Adam tomorrow.
For sure. I got a text from Shevlin just saying, hey, if you talk to Adam in the break before you go on, just make sure he's ready with all good questions. I wasn't sure what that meant.
Yeah, I'll guide him. I'll make sure to guide him. But Mike's one of the guys you really don't have to prepare a whole lot. You just kind of toss it up there, and he takes a big swing and usually hits it out of the park. Mike, always appreciate you. Have a great weekend. Enjoy your visit with Adam tomorrow morning.
Thanks so much. Yep. Bye-bye.
That is Mike Nutter joining us on the guest line. We'll take a timeout. Coming up next, we talk to Dylan Sin from the Journal-Gazette IU, Purdue, Notre Dame, basketball, football. It's all happening this week. You know, Micah Shrewsbury got introduced at the press conference. So, I mean, everybody is talking this week, and we'll get the update from Dylan Sin next here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Public service announcement. Might want to keep one eye on the weather tonight. Some nasty weather. One of those days where it's predicted to be really bad. And we only have a couple of these days a year where it's predicted to be quite as severe as it is right now. And in fact, already Little Rock, Arkansas has been hit hard by what is an apparent tornado that has caused, what did they call it, a level three?
Level three mass casualty incident been declared in Little Rock. Hundreds of injuries reported there. So
yeah, and we've got the weather moving into our area this evening. So you might want to keep at least one eye open on the weather tonight. Let's get it back to sports. And joining us now on the guest line from the Journal Gazette, Dylan Sin. Hey, this has been a busy week, Dylan, because you've got the three main colleges that you cover a lot of, and you follow their beat at Notre Dame, Purdue, and IU, and basketball, football, all on the news this week. Let's start up in South Bend. We'll work our way south. We'll start up in South Bend, where Notre Dame introduces Micah Shrewsbury to be their next coach. What are expectations for Shrewsbury at Notre Dame?
Yeah, I mean, I think the expectations have to be pretty high based on what he did at Penn State. I think Notre Dame did a terrific job with this hire. He was probably the best coaching candidate on the market this year, unless Dusty May is deciding to leave Florida Atlantic after this season. And when Notre Dame went to hire a coach, Micah Shrewsbury was the best coach available on the market. So him going 23-14 at Penn State in just his second year on the job, getting them to their first NCAA tournament win in 20 years, it's a significant resume that he's built. So much of it is Indiana-centric, and he has Notre Dame connections from his time when he was growing up, going to Cathedral and watching Notre Dame football and all of that. So I think expectations have been pretty high for him to take Notre Dame back to where it has been in the past, which is a consistent conference championship contender and NCAA tournament team.
And what is the roster makeup for Notre Dame? I haven't paid that much attention to it. Exactly how many scholarships they've got available? Are there guys entering the portal? When you have a coaching change, that's always one of the questions. And is there anybody that's following Micah Shrewsbury from Penn State to South Bend?
Well, the roster can best be described as in flux right now. I think they have even more open scholarships at this point than Indiana does, and we can talk about that in a little bit here. But yeah, they had a lot of guys who were leaving already because they were out of eligibility. They had a couple fifth year seniors who are deciding whether to return for another season with their COVID year. JJ Starling, the McDonald's All-American freshman, he already transferred to Syracuse. That was before Shrewsbury was even hired. And so there's questions about how, what comes next for this team and where he's going to go in the portal. He said he spent the first week in the portal kind of just shopping for anyone he can find who will fit Notre Dame's values and fit what he wants from his team. There are some guys who are committed to Penn State who have decommitted and have said they're open to Notre Dame, but none of them have committed yet. So right now it's just kind of shopping for the best players you can get right now.
Talking to Dylan Sin, joining us on our guest line. Let's work our way south. We'll end with Indiana. But Purdue, Zach Edey is the National Player of the Year. Does that have any impact at all on his decision on whether or not he jumps into the NBA?
I would guess it doesn't. He's said all along he's going to make the best decision for himself. He talked a little bit in the AP story on him winning the award about how it's nice to win individual awards, but they didn't get it done at the end of the season, and he's still disappointed by that. He said that he kind of has spent the time since the end of the season in isolation with his phone off most of the time, which I can understand. I'm sure it wasn't good for him just kind of mentally to be getting all those messages online and on his phone, which were likely not positive. And so I would expect it doesn't have much to do with his ultimate decision. He is down in Houston. He is leaving for Houston to accept his award at the Final Four, so that will be something to watch as well.
Well, let's get now down to Indiana, where a couple of things transpired today. First of all, Jalen Hood-Schifino is going to go to the NBA. I guess we're not shocked by this, but I don't know. Personally, I think this is like Romeo Langford 2.0, that we're seeing a very similar situation as far as statistically, type of player, size of player. What do you think about Jalen Hood-Schifino's decision?
I don't think the decision's surprising, like you said. I think it's really hard to convince one of these guys to stay if they're going to be a lottery pick, right? And Jalen Hood-Schifino very well could be a lottery pick. He demonstrated that he can be kind of a lead scoring guard or a secondary scorer next to Trayce Jackson-Davis. He showed everything the NBA wants to see. Could he have maybe driven his stock a little bit higher by staying another year and shooting better from three-point range or being a little bit more efficient? Maybe, but the difference there is probably minimal. Maybe you move up a few spots in the draft, but if you're being drafted that high, your ceiling for the amount of change you can have is just not that high. I think that he's a little bit more polished than Romeo was at this point. I think he's a little bit more well-rounded of a player, and I would expect him to be a little bit more successful than Romeo was right away. Although I think Romeo has proven that he is an NBA player. He just has struggled to stay healthy, which has not been an issue for Hood-Schifino this year.
Logan Duncan, Tamar Bates, Jordan Geronimo, all entering the portal and transferring from Indiana. Any of those surprise you?
I was a little bit surprised by Bates and Geronimo just because those guys would have been in line for some increase in playing time more than likely. I do think especially Geronimo probably would have been the odds-on favorite to start next year unless Indiana goes out into the portal and was planning on getting someone else, and maybe the fact that he transferred kind of tells you that there was some wind that you could tell that there was some Indiana bringing in someone else at that position. So Geronimo is the one that I was most surprised at just because he seemed like he had so much potential. But he didn't. He was clearly kind of unhappy at the end of the season about just the number of minutes he was playing. He wasn't playing a whole lot. So you can see it from that perspective, too, where he just thinks a fresh start would be better for him.
And, you know, you could say that position, but I'm not sure exactly what that position is. Is it the three? Is it the four? Do you want to stretch four? Do you need a better shooter? What's the skill set and type of player that Indiana most needs right now out of the portal?
I think it's someone who's kind of a stretch four type. Like I think one of the players that's in the portal that Indiana has been in contact with right now is Jamison Battle, who's 6'7", can shoot from the outside a little bit, and can help on the glass. I think that's the type of player that Indiana really needs right now. Maybe not Battle specifically. I don't know exactly where things stand with him. But I do think that a player of that nature would be good for Indiana and might bring a little bit more value than Geronimo, who struggles to shoot from the outside, shot just 26% last year, and isn't really adept from anywhere outside of about 10 feet.
What are you making of the Xavier Johnson tweet? Have you heard any details on that? Did you see the tweet this afternoon?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's a little bit hard to know because the NCAA is the type of organization where they're really going to try to they're going to try to keep things under wraps as much as possible, right? And so my guess is that it's always pointed to Xavier Johnson coming back. I assume that this means that it's pointing toward him getting that medical red shirt. I assume he'll announce it when it's official. Although, if you'll remember last year, he never officially announced that he was using his COVID year to come back for a fifth season. So maybe this is just all we get, and he shows up at practice in June. It's like, well, I'm here. So we'll see on that, but I would expect that it kind of points to him, things moving in the right direction, but probably nothing final yet.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it could be something completely off base that could just be a medical clearance by the Indiana training staff that said, okay, you're 100%, you can go at it. I mean, it was very cryptic in what he had to say. On the football front, what's the big news of the week between Notre Dame, Purdue, IU? I know there's stories, but what's the biggest storyline that you're seeing?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest storyline right now continues to be kind of the competition in Notre Dame right now. Competition kind of, they're insisting it is one between Tyler Buchner and Sam Hartman as they battle for the starting quarterback job next year. Everyone still expects Hartman to win the job, but kind of the word out of South Bend has been that Buchner has been really, really good this spring. It is intent on starting and is not taking a back seat and saying, okay, Sam, it's all you, I'll be the backup. And so I think that's kind of interesting. And it's interesting what will happen if Hartman does win the job officially. And the question has always been, will Buckner stick around for another year? Because obviously Hartman only has 1 year of eligibility left. I think that continues to be probably the number one storyline in any of these camps right now is what happens with Tyler Buckner on the occasion Hartman does win the job, as people expect.
Bill Lanois, appreciate you jumping in. You do a great job covering everything happening with our college sports and even a little extra. I think the other day you actually were covering Mad Ants playoff basketball or something like that. So you're always on top of it.
I absolutely was.
And I assume we'll see you at the ballpark this summer as well following the Tin Caps.
Of course, yes. Tin Caps, very, very soon, opening day. They get into town this weekend. So looking forward to meeting the new players and talking to some of their familiar faces once again.
Should be a lot of fun. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again.
Absolutely, Brett. Thanks for having me on.
Dylan Sin, Journal Gazette, joining us on our guest line. We'll take a final break, come back, wrap up another week of the Sports Rush next here on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Back a final time on the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Of course, news today, Hunter Dickinson has entered the transfer portal. Boy, glad it's Friday. My voice is about to go. Hunter Dickinson entering the transfer portal from Michigan. He's got a grad year that he apparently will explore his options. And it's kind of surprising to me because Jet Howard heading to the NBA, that means Hunter Dickinson would have been kind of the go-to guy, at least the center of that Michigan offense, which he kind of was this year. But I don't know what it says about the state of the Michigan program, but Hunter Dickinson is heading out from Michigan. So it's Final Four this weekend. And, of course, if you haven't already, make sure you make your picks for the Final Four by going to 1380thefan.com, and you can play for free. You got a chance to win $100 on the Bracket Bash 2023. Last chance Final Four bracket presented by Sweet Spot Golf, Coyote Creek Bar and Grill, Edding Insurance, and 1380 The Fan. I've got FAU plus points. I've got UConn giving the points away. Enjoy your weekend. Women's college basketball tonight. And don't forget, keep an eye on the skies or the radar. We could have some serious nasty weather that moves in later tonight. Thanks to our guests, Justin Cohn, Mike Nutter, and Dylan Sin. That does it for us. Don't forget, Adam Lundy hosting Talkin' Sports tomorrow morning on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.